Can we just not do the Players' Championship and the draft in the same weekend? Hello, Roger Goodell. Can you do me a little favor and not put... These are two of my favorite events to cover each and every year. Of course, you have the NFL draft, which kind of combines the confluence of college football and the NFL, and it matters here in Jacksonville with the Jaguars. And the Players' Championship, which I have often said is the best way to show off Northeast Florida. Sure. You go out there on Saturday, and it's just the best. And here we go. Now they get crammed together. This is maybe nobody else cares about this, but this is my plea to Roger Goodell, the NFL commissioner.
You've got a demand.
Just split them up. Can we just put it over during the John Deere Classic or something? I don't care.
Yeah, I don't. I'm amazed you're even here, quite frankly.
Well,
that speaks to your outstanding work ethic, my friend.
Thank you. And it went longer, of course, last night. We'll talk about the Players' Championship in a moment. The draft went as expected in terms of time, but maybe not as expected in terms of what the Jaguars did in the first round. A bit of a surprise with Blake Bortles, the quarterback from UCF, going at number 3. A lot of folks, myself included, expected them to take a quarterback somewhere in the draft, but we didn't think it would necessarily be number 3. Now, here's the rationale. Here's why Dave Caldwell took Blake Bortles at number 3. They looked at this year's draft and next year's draft as well. Now, again, that's projecting for this year and projecting a projection for next year.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not an easy thing to do. But they decided that, hey, if Bortles would be coming out next year, he would be the first pick in the draft. He's going to be a high pick this year, too. And because most of the decisions that they're making are not just about this year, it's about building to being a playoff team next year. They want to certainly be better this year, and if they get to the playoffs or compete this year, great. But they have the support of Shad Khan to say, all right, this is a 3-year plan to become a competitive team, to become a playoff contender. So they look to 2015 and say, all right, here's Bortles. He needs some work. He's a big, strong guy with a good arm, led UCF on a terrific season this past year, beat Penn State, and among others, had a great year. There's a comparison to be made between
he's sort of a local boy in a way.
Sort of, although I don't think that went into the draft decision at all. It certainly helped that they were, you know, it's easy to go down to UCF and scout a game. You just drive down there. And I think they were aware of him and had been aware of him quite a bit.
You like this pick?
Maybe. That's a definite maybe. Because here's why. A lot of people are making this comparison, oh, it's Blaine Gabbert 2.0. And I can see why they are in some regard. Big, tall, strong-armed quarterback. Same height, although Bortles is a little thicker than Gabbert. And maybe not a guy who had the kind of acclaim like a Johnny Manziel did or like some other quarterbacks did around around college football. The other thing that people see is, well, here's a guy who the plan is the same as it was with Gabbert. You may recall when the Jaguars drafted Gabbert, they were going to sit him for most of the first year, if not all the first year, and let him learn behind David Garrard. Well, then Garrard had some back injuries, struggled a bit in camp. Jack Del Rio felt like his job was on the line. He panicked, you could say it was a panic move or not. Got rid of Garrard right before the season, and by week 3, Blaine Gabbert is starting. He gets hammered early on and never recovered. The difference here, though, is twofold. One, Bortles appears to be a guy who likes contact. That was never something that was said about Blaine Gabbert. Bortles actually started out his football career playing linebacker, so that's a positive sign. The other thing is you've got a coach and a GM who are on the same page, and I think that's going to show some positive things for Bortles' future in Jacksonville.
Excellent. Well, as we continue to watch that, you've got some other sports news and notes. As you said, there's a lot of ground to cover here.
There really is. Let's touch real briefly on the Michael Sam part of the draft.
Yeah.
You might recall that Sam became the first player to come out as openly gay. He was from the University of Missouri. He was picked in the 7th round, so he's the first openly gay athlete to be drafted in the NFL.
What did you think about all the discussion on Twitter about his pick and the video that was widely replayed showing him and his partner kissing on TV?
Yeah, so I'll tell you, I think he was picked about where people expected him to be after he had kind of a poor combine showing.
Uh-huh.
We talked about him being a 5th or 6th round pick when the story initially broke, had a bad combine. So 7th round is about where I think he would be. And let me just say this. If you're going to say that you don't have a problem with a gay football player, you can't say you have a problem with him kissing his boyfriend unless you're also going to have a problem with a straight player kissing his girlfriend. Certainly, This got one Miami Dolphin player in trouble who tweeted out.
He tweeted something like,
OMG,
this is
and
horrible.
Terrible.
Or,
right, yes,
right,
so,
right.
So he's been disciplined by the team and by the league, and we'll see where it goes. There's no guarantee, by the way, that Michael Sam makes the team. So we'll see. If he does, though, that will certainly be a momentous thing.
But you don't see his low pick in the draft as having as much to do with his sexuality as his skills and his performance in the combine?
Maybe half a round could have, you know, maybe. But again, part of it is here's a guy who is, you know, where does he fit in the right scheme? I don't think it really impacted that dramatically. Maybe a bit, but not dramatically.
Not dramatically. And then last but not least, the TPC all wrapped up. They had a little bit of a rain delay, yep, but it all came down to number 17.
Yeah, and as it so often does, Martin Kaymer, who tied the course record on Thursday, had a one-stroke lead over Ponte Vedra's Jim Furyk as he stood on the tee at 17. His tee shot barely made it on the green. It nearly rolled off, so he decides he's going to chip it from the thick, rough collar. A terrible chip. Left him with a 28-foot putt for par, a big swinging left to right. Somehow, in the failing light, he makes it. One of the great putts you'll ever see at number 17. He then made par on the final hole to win. Afterwards, he said that winning the Players is like winning a major, and I asked him to explain that.
You know, it was very difficult to answer right away after what just happened. But, you know, it is probably the biggest tournament we play all year, except the majors. It's the same field, a lot of world ranking points, and the status of the tournament. You know, if you can put your name on that trophy, it's quite a big pleasure. It means that you have done very well for 4 days, played very consistent golf, and I played very patient. And so it's a big, big trophy and a big achievement for me.
Couple of notes on Kaymer. He has won a major before. He won the PGA Championship and was for a short time the world's number one player. So this is not exactly out of the left field. He also won on Mother's Day, which is special for him.
Sure.
His mother died 6 years ago on Mother's Day.
Aww.
So certainly a big win for the German, who was very gracious in winning.
What a poignant backstory. And Cole, I hope you're taking a few days off.
sometime maybe in July.